Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today and let us surprise you.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Listen, folks, I know it's a preseason game, but we're T-minus 49 hours away from Chiefs football. Saturday night in Arizona against the Cardinals, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and the Kansas City Chiefs will be suited up and on a football field for the first time in some 6 months. And I'll be the first to say I'm excited. I don't care if it's a preseason game. I don't care if Mahomes is only going to play a quarter. I'm just excited to see football again, because we've been without it for such a long time. Welcome into After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Speaking of things that haven't been on for a while, it's our first After Hours in a week. And first time, Jacob, that you and I have been on the show together in a while.
Yeah, it feels like it's been over a month.
I know. I mean, I was gone for a week. My wife and I went to Jamaica. And then you said you've been off for like the last week, week and a half. So it's been a little bit since the two of us have been in the studio for sure.
Yeah, it's been a while. Missed it. Glad to be back tonight. I was looking forward to it after work.
We're excited. We're ready to go. That is my producer, Jacob Mustard. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. We've got a lot to get to on the show tonight. We've got a couple of guests lined up. At 6:30 tonight, we're going to be visiting with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. Royals fresh off a series against the Red Sox. They were able to salvage a win yesterday to avoid the sweep at Fenway. They're now a game below 500. They get set for a series tomorrow against the Minnesota Twins with Byron Buxton and 25 guys you've never heard of. That's pretty much their roster after their trade deadline dump, but they're a measly 3-3 since the trade deadline, so they haven't been all that bad. We'll be talking with Jalen about that coming up at 6:30. Coming up at 8:30, we will have Jordan Foote. He is a longtime writer and reporter for both the Chiefs and the Royals, and we're going to talk Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to talk training camp, the preseason game on Saturday against Arizona, and the season expectations, because there are some, and we'll talk about it throughout the show, who don't have a lot of faith in this Kansas City Chiefs team. And one team in the AFC West in particular has begun to rise to the fore for those people as the team that will usurp them atop the AFC West. And hint, hint, that team took a major blow today, especially on the offensive side of the football, a big-time injury, which we will discuss. First thing I want to get to, though, is the Royals-Red Sox game from last night. It was an interesting one, firstly, because the Royals are looking to avoid a sweep last night. Boston took the first two of this series, and a lot of it was self-inflicted by the Kansas City Royals. I mean, you had the base running error with Nick Lofton a couple of nights ago, to shoddy pitching, to untimely hitting that really kept the Royals away from potentially even winning this series and getting above 500. But last night, they make a change in the lineup. For the majority of this season, barring an off day, Jonathan India has been hitting leadoff for this Royals baseball team. He has been hitting in the one spot all season long. I believe over 90% of the Royals' plate appearances this year in the leadoff spot have been Jonathan India. Well, he's been struggling, I would say, over the last week, week and a half, even 2 weeks. So Matt Quatrero and the Royals coaching staff decides to make a change, and they put newly acquired outfielder Mike Yastrzemski in the leadoff spot. Of course, Yaz, former San Francisco Giant that the Royals traded for near the deadline, and worked out extremely well. Yaz goes 2-for-3 at the plate, hitting leadoff. He scored a run in this game. And Jonathan India, who goes from hitting first to hitting seventh in this lineup, he goes 2-for-4 at the dish, including a 3-run home run that busted the game wide open and really allowed the Royals to hold on for the victory last night. Adam Frazier had a multi-hit game, hitting sixth. John Rave had arguably his best at plate appearances of his Royals career, going 2-for-4 last night in the eighth spot. Kyle Isbell had 2 RBIs and one on a single hit. So you look at that, Royals had 12 hits as a team last night. 9 of them came from the leadoff hitter and 6 through 9, meaning that Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino, and Michael Garcia, the 4 best hitters in your lineup, and I would say unarguably the 4, that's the quartet of this Royals roster in terms of the batting order, had 3 of this team's 12 hits last night, and you win the game. So that's a huge factor in last night's victory, and hopefully a welcome sign of things to come. Michael Wacha picked up yet another quality start last night, giving up just 2 earned across 6 innings of work. I'm a bit heartbroken for Michael Wacha, just to slight him out, because the guy has a 3.36 ERA this season. He's got a whip of a 1.15, and he's 6-9. Just for comparison's sake, last year he had a 3.35 ERA. So a 1/100 of a point lower was his ERA a season ago, with a higher whip of 1.19, 13-8. The guy had the same ERA and more or less the same whip as he had a season ago, and instead of being 13-8, the guy's 6-9. That's why anybody who tries to point out wins and losses to a starting pitcher, especially in today's day and age of baseball, ignore that person. Because I feel like wins and losses are not a strong pitching stat any longer in this league. Kind of like using wins as a quarterback stat. I know that we in Kansas City like to use it a lot to hype up and uplift Patrick Mahomes. First of all, you don't have to use quarterback wins to hype up Patrick Mahomes. Just mention the Super Bowls and the MVPs and the fact that he's the best player on the planet. You don't need wins to prove that point. It's just one of those things that wins and losses as a starting pitching stat, I don't think they mean bubkiss anymore.
No, I mean, the best example is going to be Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
He's 6 wins and 8 losses, and like you said a moment ago, barely dipped above 2.0 ERA, which is just slightly worse than last year, and he had over 13 wins last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's, for his career, he's 17-11 in 46 starts with a whip under a 0.94 and an ERA of a 1.99. He's got a 1.99 ERA, and you're telling me he's only got 17 wins in 46 starts? That's despicable. The guy's ERA plus for his career is a 209. Mind you, an ERA plus of over 100 is considered above league average. He's got a 209. And the guy's got 17 wins. Absolutely despicable. He leads Major League Baseball this year in ERA, ERA plus, FIP, which is fielding independent pitching, hits per 9 innings, which he's only allowing 6 hits per 9 innings pitched, and he's only allowing half of a home run per 9 innings pitched. Means he's giving up 1 home run per 18 innings that he's on the bump. Oh, and he's 6-8. Don't look at wins and losses when you're trying to determine who's a great starting pitcher and who isn't. But Wacha picks up his 6th win last night. Urcig he did give up an earned run, but he was able to hold on over the course of an inning. Carlos Estevez shut the door in the ninth. But here's a guy I want to talk about, because we've been having this conversation over the course of the year, right? Because you look at this Royals team and you know Urcic's the eighth inning guy and you know Estevez as your ninth inning guy. But we were questioning throughout the course of the year, who is that seventh inning guy, right? It was Daniel Lynch for a little while there, and then he got banged up. And you sort of wanted to hold on to Daniel Lynch in case you had like a long relief situation, especially with all these starting pitchers going down with injuries. So he kind of gets thrust out of that seventh inning role. Oh, well, you know, Steven Cruz is pitching incredibly well. Well, post All-Star break, he has really, really struggled. Taylor Clark was pitching really, really well at the beginning of the year, but over the last two or three months, he has faltered. Folks, enter Hunter Harvey, a guy who pitched in 49 games last year, split up between two separate teams because the Royals acquired him at the deadline. And all in all, he had an year, a 4.44 ERA across 49 games pitched. He ends up with a big-time injury, misses most of this year. He's come back just in the last 6-7 weeks. He has now pitched 9 2/3 innings, 11 total appearances. He's got a win, 4 holds, and has yet to give up an earned run. He has got 10 strikeouts to 1 walk and has allowed just 4 hits across 9 2/3 innings. I think Hunter Harvey has solidified himself, maybe I'm going too far too fast, as that seventh inning guy, that guy that you can really hold on to. Allow Urcic to get to the eighth, allow Estevez to get to the ninth. This feels like not quite HDH levels. I'm never going to go that far because that was an anomaly. That was a once in a million type of bullpen, I think. But those guys, if the Royals are leading after 6 innings and you can go Harvey, Urcic, Estevez, I think you're going to win a hell of a lot more than you're going to lose. And instead of calling it HDH, I guess we could call it I don't know. I got nothing for you. But the Royals get the W, and we'll be talking with Jalen Thompson about that a little bit later on in the show tonight, coming up at 6:30. We will discuss the series starting tomorrow on the road against the Minnesota Twins. A little bit of a breaking news story. This broke probably about a half hour before the show tonight, but you've been hearing it a lot. Colin Cowherd said it today, and we may play the audio a little bit later in the show, that he believes the Chiefs dynasty is over, and he himself today picked the Los Angeles Chargers to win the AFC West this year. Well, what happens just mere hours after Colin Cowherd makes this statement? According to Chris Rimm of ESPN, Los Angeles Chargers Pro Bowl left tackle Rashawn Slater will now miss the entire 2025 season after suffering a ruptured patellar tendon in practice on Thursday. Slater is now scheduled to undergo surgery and will be placed on the IR, the injured reserve, for the remainder of the season. He left practice on a medical cart after he was going through a team blocking drill where he was matched up with I have no idea. I tried my best. I'll wave the white flag on that one. With an outside linebacker of the Chargers and collapsed. He said he started grabbing his left leg immediately and now will miss the entire season. So this Chargers team, which has been a hot ticket by some who want to do something different than the smart decision and just picking the Chiefs to win the AFC West because they've done it for like 8 or 9 consecutive years at this point. Mahomes has literally won the AFC West division every year he's been in the league, and that includes his rookie year when he was the backup to Alex Smith. Regardless, it seems like the Chargers' chances are certainly hurt a little bit. Now, on the flip side of that, former Chargers wide receiver Keenan Allen, who spent last season with the Bears, also today signed a 1-year deal with Los Angeles. So the Chargers gain a wide receiver, a guy who is arguably the best wide receiver in the franchise's history. I said arguably, right? There's other guys to throw into that category. That's a debate for another time. But they gain a guy like that back, who is now going into his 13th year in the NFL, I believe. But they lose one of the best young tackles in football, fresh off a Pro Bowl berth, and their blindside protector in Rashawn Slater. And it'll be interesting to see what Jim Harbaugh and company elect to do, because you have a really talented right tackle, young guy, in Joe Alt, who was a left tackle in college at Notre Dame. Do they make a decision and try to slide Joe Alt out to the left tackle position this season, or do they elect to leave him at right tackle, which is where they see his more natural position and his long-term position, with him at right tackle, Slater at left tackle, and just try to workshop something together to protect the blind side of Justin Herbert? I was not on the train of thinking the Chargers could contend with the Chiefs this year in the AFC West anyway. I've always had more faith in the Denver Broncos. I mean, I had the Chargers pegged to finish third in this division before this injury even came. I said this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that I thought the Broncos were the second best team in the AFC West. With that defense, with, you know, some new options on the offensive side of the football, with I just really... am not entirely bought in to what this Chargers team has in front of them. And this is not the first injury news for the Chargers, right? There's still the situation with Najee Harris from the 4th of July thing and a firework either hitting him in the eye or exploding near his eye. Regardless, he had some sort of damage to his eye. And what does that mean for the beginning of his season? It's still the Chiefs' division to lose until somebody can prove it. Right, somebody has got to show us, yeah, no pun intended with Missouri being the show me state, that they can play better football over the course of an 18-week regular season than Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, and this Kansas City Chiefs team. Nobody's done it yet.
So as of right now, they do have Joe Alt listed as the starting left tackle.
Okay.
They currently have Trey Pipkins the third as the right tackle, who's kind of their interchange guy. But they also have Mekhi Becton, a former tackle prospect that they could possibly move around. He's currently slated as guard, though.
Yeah, he got drafted as a tackle out of Louisville. And then, I'm trying to remember, was it the Jets who drafted Mekhi Becton? And he has really struggled at tackle. He signed that deal with the Eagles and played guard this past season for Philadelphia and really kind of had a coming out party a little bit. Man, I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I'm trying to remember. I really thought that Alt started at right tackle and Slater started at left last year, but it might have been flipped. Maybe Joe Alt was the left tackle last year and Slater was the right tackle. I probably have it wrong in my head.
On the unofficial depth chart, they had Slater as the left tackle, Alt as the right.
Okay, and now it's flipped because of the injury to Slater. Okay. Man, yeah, that means that they'll likely, yeah, it's seeing it here in the ESPN article that they'll likely move Alt to left tackle and play Trey Pipkins at right tackle. I mean, Trey Pipkins is a guy who has been around the league for quite a bit, I believe, but he was a third round pick of the Chargers back in 2019. Obviously, a guy that is not of the same caliber of talent that Rashawn Slater is. So that's definitely going to throw a wrench into the AFC West, really the division as a whole, for the Chargers to have an injury to a talented player like that this early, before the season's even started, before the preseason has even started. 913-586-7965. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber and Jacob Mustard, here on 96.5 The Fan.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment You've got big plans and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today and let us surprise you.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
I think Kansas City, the dynasty part is over. They may win a Super Bowl, but I think their division's too good to be a dynasty. And I'll give you an example. When Nick Saban was at Alabama, LSU couldn't get the right coach. Auburn couldn't get the right coach. Ole Miss couldn't get the right coach for most of it. Tennessee couldn't get the right coach. And he dominated. But then Georgia got Kirby Smart. And then Texas came in with Sark and Nick Saban didn't look as dominating. Same thing happened to Urban at Florida when Nick Saban came in. Yeah, Urban Meyer was dominating. And then Nick Saban went to a great program, and then Urban wasn't dominating. And if you look at LeBron's dominance for 8, 9, 10 years in the Eastern Conference, he had to beat the Raptors and the Pacers. Now, he would go into the other conference, he didn't have the same luck when you're facing the Warriors, right? Same with Tom Brady.
Okay, Colin. If you say so. Yeah, the division, the AFC West as a whole, is as talented as it has ever been since Patrick Mahomes arrived in Kansas City. I will not argue that point with you. I think the Raiders are the worst team in that division, and I still think they might be, you know, even a 7 or an 8 win football team. I think there's a legitimate possibility that, again, just like we saw last year, the AFC West could see 3 teams make the postseason with the Chiefs, Chargers, and Broncos. But to say that the dynasty is over is just preposterous, in my opinion. And I mean, I don't argue necessarily with the Nick Saban point that he raises, but there were a lot of extenuating circumstances behind that. Saban was getting older. It looked like he was slowly exiting the game anyway. Plus, you had, you know, NIL and the transfer portal. It changed the entire landscape of college football. And Saban, I think, struggled a little bit more than maybe others did to try to catch up or adjust and adapt to that. Urban Meyer's a terrible example. First of all, there was no dynasty at Florida. In my opinion, for a dynasty to have taken shape, you need to win 3. And I don't know if that means 3 over the course of 6 years or 7 years, but you got to win 3 in a period of time. Urban won 2 at Florida. Yes, he went back to back, but there was no dynasty at the University of Florida. Not to mention the fact that he ended up going to Ohio State and winning a national championship there. So what's your point? And LeBron, for him to throw LeBron out, like, oh, you know, he dominated for all those years in the East, and then he went to the West, and it wasn't the same. He was 36 when he went to the West. Colin, stop. You're just making a fool out of yourself. And then he picks the Chargers to win the AFC West, which is taking a massive beating because the Chargers Pro Bowl left tackle Rashawn Slater is now out for the remainder of the year with a ruptured patellar tendon. 913-586-7965 is our number. Couple of messages in the text line. Somebody mentioning, you know, Rashawn Slater, it's over, Chargers. Yikes. I don't know if it's necessarily over for the Chargers, but that definitely throws a massive wrench into the grand scheme of things for them as the season goes on. When you have a, you know, you can move Joe Alt to left tackle, and that's great, but now the right tackle position is a little bit up in the air. I guess you could say. It's not over until the Chiefs say it's over. Exactly. That's the way that this division has run since Andy showed up in Kansas City. And until somebody can prove it, until somebody shows up in week 18 and wears the AFC West division champs hats, and it's not the Kansas City Chiefs, on that day, I will believe that this division is not the Kansas City Chiefs to win or lose. Talking about who that seventh inning guy is for the Royals, and I said earlier that I think Hunter Harvey might be taking over that role. Somebody says, it sure the F ain't Angel Serpa. Yeah, he's a tough one. He had such a good spring training. Does everybody remember that? He didn't give up a single earned run in spring training, and everybody was like, oh, man, Angel Serpa might be rising to the fore, and then immediately like gave up three runs in his first appearance of the year, and it was like, oh, all right, still Angel Serpa. Jacob, you and I were talking earlier, and I had said that I don't view wins and losses as a quarterback, as a starting pitcher stat anymore. Well, somebody in the text line, I think trying to be tongue-in-cheek, says, it will be so awesome when Major League Baseball decides that championships will now be based on garbage metrics and statistics, but for now, they do it on wins and losses. Sir, I understand you're trying to be funny, but you proved my point. Wins and losses are a team stat. A team wins or loses a game. I don't think that you can place the blame for a win or a loss on an individual player, even an individual player that has such a level of importance as a starting pitcher does. Yeah, sometimes a pitcher wins a game because they deserve the win or they deserve the loss. A lot of times they get a no decision because they have a lack of run support one way or the other. I mean, I've seen Michael Walker go 6 1/3 and give up 3 earned runs and lose a game, when he should not be in a position to lose a game. A guy who has a 3.3 ERA should not be 6-9 on the season. That's where Michael Wacha is. That's why I say that wins and losses are not something that I look at with a starting pitcher. With a team, yeah, obviously, wins and losses are a team stat, not an individual player stat. Somebody else, when I was talking about Mahomes playing in the preseason game on Saturday, said, LOL, there's no way Mahomes is playing a full quarter, maybe one series. Well, I read to you from Matt McMillan, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid had a press conference after practice today at training camp in St. Joe, in which he reported that every single Chiefs quarterback will play one quarter in Saturday's game against the Cardinals, meaning Patrick Mahomes will play a quarter, Gardner Minshew will play a quarter, Bailey Zappi will play a quarter, and Chris Oladukun will play a quarter. Boom. So, yes, they will. In fact, all be playing. Martin, I appreciate you calling in, but unfortunately, we're going to have to take a break here. We've got Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. He will be with us in the next segment to talk a little Royals baseball. Maybe we'll run it down with him, like see how important he believes wins and losses are to a starting pitcher in today's day and age of Major League Baseball. 913-586-7965. Martin, I assure you we will have time for callers a little bit later on in our show tonight. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship-level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
The Kansas City Royals, after a win last night against the Boston Red Sox, able to avoid the sweep at Fenway Park, now get set for a three-game set against the AL Central rival Minnesota Twins starting tomorrow night on the road in Minnesota. And on the line with us right now to discuss all of that is Jalen Thompson. He is a Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. And Jalen, I think one of the bigger stories of last night's game was the fact that you saw Mike Yastrzemski move into the leadoff spot and Jonathan India slide down to number 7. Were you surprised by that move last night? And maybe more importantly, were you surprised by the positive result of that move?
I wasn't surprised by the move, Logan. I think that Mike Yastrzemski had really good numbers against Dustin May in his career. He's a guy that really hits right-handers well from the left-handed batter's box. And the Royals wanted to get him as much time as he can against the matchup against Dustin May. And it turned out to be successful for Yastrzemski. He had a couple of hits, had a nice play in right field to help Michael walk out on the mound. And really, when you look at the moves that the Royals made this season, they wanted Jonathan India to be the guy, to be the leadoff hitter at top of the lineup. And he just hasn't done that at an efficient clip for them. So to be able to shake up the lineup, get Yastrzemski, who also has a lot of experience being a leadoff hitter up top, it kind of helped get more base runners that you needed in front of Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Garcia, Salvador Perez on base. And Jonathan India, he thrives lower in the lineup. He kind of broke up the mix of having a bunch of left-handers down at the bottom of the order by putting a right-hander in there in the mix. And he hits the 3-run homer to help the Royals win the game. So I think it worked out for yesterday. It's the time we'll see a tell if it's going to work out again for them moving forward.
Yeah, that's the next question I was going to ask you. Is there any indication, any anticipation that we will continue to see Yaz or maybe even somebody else in the leadoff spot rather than Jonathan India for the remainder of the year?
I don't know if it will be something that will be set in stone moving forward. But I do think that if there's opportunity to get Mike Yastrzemski some time atop the batting order against a right-hander, then I could see them, the Royals, going to that method a little bit more and allowing India to just kind of settle at the bottom of the order. But honestly, it just depends on how Matt Cottrell likes the matchups and how he likes to see his lineup, because it's really difficult to kind of peg where guys are going to hit in the order, but outside of the top four, which you know are going to be Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Garcia, and Salvador Perez.
We haven't really had a chance, Jalen, to catch up since the trade deadline when the Royals acquired Yaz, as well as Adam Frazier and Randall Grichuk and a couple of starting pitchers for this Royals team. I want to focus, though, primarily on those guys in the batter's box, Yastrzemski, Grichuk, and Frazier. You know, what do you make of those moves for this Royals team as they've played out thus far since the trade deadline? Have they been a net positive or a net negative in your view for the way this team has played since August 1st?
I would definitely say it's a net positive because those guys provide professional at-bats. Those guys, you look at what Adam Frazier provides you, he can hit from the left side of the plate, give you good versatility in defense, in second base, can play the outfield, but also he just knows how to hit the ball and be a consummate pro, hitting the ball to the outfield, working counts, that's needed for this Royals team. You look at what Randall Grichuk and Mike Yastrzemski both bring to the table. The Royals kind of see those guys as one complete player. You know, Yastrzemski's good against right-handers. Grichuk's good against left-handers. So that is a natural platoon that the Royals really like to utilize. And you've seen it yesterday. Yastrzemski gets a couple of at-bats, and then they make a change. And here comes Grichuk coming in that role. So both of those guys in that platoon is really needed while you have guys like Jack Caglione that's on the injured list right now. Mark Cannon still working his way back on the injured list. So having both of those guys be one complete type of role for the team is great. Once again, professional at-bat power that they can add in the lineup. And then I just think that you mix all of that together with what the Royals already have and not necessarily relying on a lot of the younger guys that they were earlier on in the season. And I think that the Royals have a really potent offense that, if they can get going, can potentially make a run down the stretch.
So I want to run a hypothetical by you, Jalen. We were having this discussion earlier in the show because I mentioned Waka last night, goes six innings. He gets the quality start. He picks up his sixth win of the year. But he's got a 3.3 ERA, and he's 6-9 this season. And I had said, I don't believe that wins and losses can be looked at as a starting pitching stat the way that you could 20, 30, 40 years ago when guys were pitching 8 or 9 innings in a game. Is that a fair estimate to make? Do you pay a lot of attention to a starting pitcher's wins and losses anymore in today's day and age?
For me personally, I think that the ERA is the most important thing to look at now for pitchers in a game, because in reality, you don't have pitchers that are going 7, 8, 9 innings anymore. And that's just a lot of that is due to the quality of the power arm in a bullpen that every team has now, and just the ability to mix and match on occasion when you're going through the dreaded third time through a batting order. So when you look at the wins and losses with Michael Waka in particular, he hasn't gotten run support pretty much at all throughout the entire season. And he's been putting up one earned run, two earned runs, no earned run throughout his starts this year. And he's really been the solid backbone for the Royals starting rotation, as they are without Cole Reagans and Chris Bubich and Michael Lorenzen at the moment. So I think that with him and Seth Lugo, you can't necessarily look at the wins and losses. Look at the ERA. Look at what they're doing, getting the team deeper into games where you can use those power arms in the back of the bullpen, the Angel Zerpas, the Lucas Erceg, the Hunter Harveys, the Carlos Estevez's of the world. I think that is why you can't necessarily hang your hat on wins and losses, because those games are close when they lead the game. And if those games are either tied or go into a win or a loss category, that's not on the starting pitcher.
You mentioned Hunter Harvey's name, and he's a guy we were talking about earlier as well, because it seems like this Royals team, obviously this year, Erceg has been the eighth inning guy, Estevez has been the ninth inning guy, and who the Royals look to have in that seventh inning to kind of fit that, you know, that HDH sort of trio that they're trying to build has kind of fluctuated throughout the year. But it seems like recently, since Hunter Harvey came back off the injury, he is really beginning to emerge as that guy. 9 2/3 innings across 11 games pitched. He has yet to allow an earned run. What have you seen from Hunter Harvey since he came back off the injury this year in Kansas City? And is this something that we can expect more of as Royals fans from Hunter Harvey on the bump?
Hunter Harvey is someone that the Royals believe a lot in, and they always knew that he had the stuff to really compete in a high leverage situation. The key with him is just staying healthy and being able to get out there. I talked to him when he was just working his way back, and he said, you know, I was really itching to get back out there. And he really knew that once he could be able to throw 10, 20 pitches and wake up the next day and feel fine with the velocity and everything still there, that he knew that he was going to be right where he needed to be, on track to just be getting back to the guy that the Royals thought they were getting when they traded for him last year ahead of the trade deadline from the Washington Nationals. So I think that his stuff is electric. He can touch 99, 100 miles per hour with his fastball. He can really mix in some secondary pitches that you really can really love and enjoy to see if you're a Royals fan out there. I think that for Hunter Harvey, it's just a matter of, can he be consistent and stay healthy and really slide into that role where he can be a seventh, eighth, or inning guy in a setup role in front of Carlos the seventh, and also allow Lucas Erceg to kind of get back to being in that fireman role where he can be deployed wherever the team needs it against the highest level leverage and competition in the game.
So the Royals, you know, they only win 1-3 in Boston against a Red Sox team that was really on a hot streak. They'd won 7 in a row before last night's game. They're off today. They head to Minnesota for a 3-game series starting tomorrow. A Minnesota team that had a full-blown fire sale at the trade deadline, but they're 3-3 since that point, including just winning 2 out of 3 against the Detroit Tigers. What do you make of this Minnesota Twins team, and what can we expect best-case scenario-wise for the Royals upon leaving Minnesota coming up on Sunday?
I think best-case scenario, if you're the Royals, you want to sweep, because then these are the type of series where, like you said, a team sold off and traded a lot of their top pieces at the trade deadline. They're playing for next year. They're playing for the ability to have that cap, that not cap flexibility, but have flexibility to go out and, you know, improve their team in the offseason, right? So you need to go out and try to get those 3 victories against the Twins this weekend if you're the Royals. 2 out of 3 would also be satisfactory, but when you're playing a divisional opponent, you know, every win is important, especially if you're looking to make the playoffs at the end of the year. And to get 3 against the Twins would be very key. It's going to be tough. You have Seth Lugo going against Joe Ryan on Friday night. Joe Ryan is one of the teams, one of the pitchers that are really is tough against the Royals. So they have to figure him out. But, I mean, they have a chance, so they just got to make the best of it.
Well, Jalen, appreciate the time as always. Have a safe trip. I'm assuming that you're heading out to Minnesota to cover the series, and hopefully you come back with a series win or maybe even a sweep for the Royals.
Thank you so much, Logan. I appreciate it. Always good talking to you.
Absolutely. That is Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star joining us here, talking a little Royals baseball after they lose 2 out of 3 against Boston, but they do win last night to avoid the sweep as they get set for 3 games against Minnesota. And this is a massive stretch, I will say, for the Kansas City Royals. Huge opportunity in front of them for a team that is 1 game under 500, 57-58. You've got 3 games on the road against Minnesota, a team that has dealt away a lot of pieces since the trade deadline. They kept Byron Buxton and Joe Ryan and got rid of pretty much everybody else. You then go back to the friendly confines of Kauffman for 3 games against the Washington Nationals. Now, the Nats have a lot of young up-and-coming talent on their roster, including guys like James Woods, but again, this is a team that is very, very beatable. Then you've got 3 games at home against the Chicago White Sox. You follow that up with 4 games at home against the Texas Rangers, a Rangers team that dealt away a few pieces at the deadline as well. So, if you're the Royals, you've got 13 games here against very, very beatable baseball teams, and only 3 of those 13 are on the road. Then you've got to get set because you've got 3 games on the road against Detroit, August 22nd, 23rd, 24th. Then you've got 3 games on the road against the White Sox, followed by 3 games at home against Detroit. So, 13 games against, let's face it, pretty bad baseball teams before you've got 6 games against the AL Central leading Tigers in a 9-game span. Thankfully for you, the 3 games sandwiched in between is the White Sox. The Royals, it's been long said, the Royals had one of, if not the easiest, second half schedule of any team in Major League Baseball. It's put up or shut up time if you're Kansas City. You got back to close to 500 before the All-Star break and before the deadline. You're still hovering around that mark. Now is the time to make your move. You're only four games out of a wild card spot. Let's go get it at this point if you're the Kansas City Royals. 913-586-7965 is our number. Speaking of the Kansas City Royals, this team made a move recently. Not one of injury consequence, not a guy being put on IL or taken off of IL. Nope, this was a free agent signing by the Royals. And it's not a big name, but it is a name you've heard before. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports. Welcome back, Jonathan Heasley. Yes, the Kansas City Royals have agreed on a minor league deal with 28-year-old right-hander Jonathan Heasley. He was a 13th round pick of the Royals back in 2018 out of Oklahoma State. Made his major league debut with the Royals back in 2021. He pitched parts of three seasons with Kansas City, with a 5.45 ERA across 36 appearances, including, I believe, 24 starts over those 36 games. He got moved to the bullpen in 2023. He started 21 games back in that 2021 season, or 2022, and then in 2023 was moved to the bullpen. He spent last year with Baltimore. He was traded to the Orioles in the offseason. He only pitched in four games with Baltimore and then was in AAA. He got released. He had a season-ending shoulder injury. He got picked up by the White Sox and then was cut right at the beginning of the regular season. He was with them during spring training and then got assigned to the Arizona complex before being cut. So it's going to be a minor league deal. He hasn't pitched in Major League Baseball in over a year at this point, and he is going to report to AAA Omaha and is expected to be more of a relief pitcher or long reliever for the most part. So not sure if there's an expectation of him arriving in Kansas City anytime soon. The 28-year-old has only pitched 139 innings in the show in his Major League career, but a little bit noteworthy that Jonathan Heasley is going to be coming back to the Royals, the team that drafted him back in 2018. And like I said, I'm only 3 years in, or I guess parts of 4 years, 40 total games he's pitched, including 24 starts. All 24 of those starts were with the Royals, with a 5.89 ERA career. His best year was a 4.91 ERA across three starts in 2021. He had a 5.28 ERA in 22, a 7.20 ERA in 2023, and in just four appearances with the Orioles last year, he had a 16.88 ERA. Damn near 17 was his ERA. He gave up 10 earned runs in 5 1/3 innings. Minor league deal. Minor league deal, and with this Royals, you know, the new coaching staff, they have become pitching savants, I guess. I really don't know, but if there's one team for a guy who has long struggled in Major League Baseball, if there's one spot to land right now, it appears that Kansas City is a great spot for you. I mean, look at what they've done with Cole Reagans and with Waka and with Seth Lugo. I mean, Seth Lugo has become a Cy Young contender with Kansas City. What they've done with him in his career has just been remarkable. And to take a young guy, you know, in Noah Cameron and have him become the best rookie starting pitcher in baseball this year, not a bad spot to land. And with it being his former organization with a new staff and a new culture, this could be an interesting mix here for Jonathan Heasley. So we'll wait and see. Hour two of After Hours coming your way next. 913-586-7965 is our number. I'm Logan Weber here with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Jacob Mustard is alongside. He is my producer for tonight's program here on 96.5 The Fan. Don't forget, coming up at 8:30, we're going to have Jordan Foote on to talk Kansas City Chiefs, talk training camp, preseason, and everything in between here on your home for Kansas City sports.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.